Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio. This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
To go. 613 and show number 1018 continues. You've got DePaul students coming in later today.
Yeah, and a U of I tour group too.
Oh, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
It must be college day on the Steve Cochran Show. Dave, will you sing Northwestern Fight Song later?
For the DePaul students?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
How about the U of I
theme? Yeah. Go catch you.
Mary Vandeville's back. She could dance the U of I fight song.
Askiwawa, baby.
Weren't you on a dance line there?
I was.
What's the U of I dance line called?
The Linettes.
Were you in a Linette?
I was in a Linette. Yes, wore the go-go boots and all.
Stand by. Did you bring your go-go boots?
No, they disintegrated.
All right, well, just wear your regular boots then and be prepared. We'll do it up.
Okay.
We got to do the top six at six. Why don't we start right now?
Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel. It's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks.
Get your kicks. With the top six at six. Sponsored by American Weathermakers, the home of the 60 Minute Man.
Maybe the most interesting story of the day, the John F. Kennedy documents are scheduled to be released today. There could be a last minute snafu. You know, when the snafus happen, they're always last minute. But as of now, Trump has agreed to allow these documents to be released. These will be an initial batch of several thousand and eventually tens of thousands of documents, including what Lee Harvey Oswald was doing in Mexico in, I believe, August. August or September?
August.
Of 63. Next. The new Chicago FBI boss brings terrorism, mob, public corruption experience. Jeffrey Sallet or Saleh?
Saleh.
Jeffrey Saleh has taken over the post November 6th from Michael J. Anderson. He comes from the FBI's New Orleans office, a staff about half the size of the one head in Chicago. We have a lot of good friends at the FBI.
Yes.
What are they saying?
Big, big thumbs up for Mr. Jeffrey here. He was instrumental. On September 11th, 2001, he was in one of the offices in Manhattan, just a few blocks from World Trade Center, the first tower, when it collapsed, and ran and was helping, just literally was in the fray in 9/11, and then ran the Boston Marathon when that bombing went off, too.
So he was in that race?
He was running mile 25 of the Boston Marathon when the bombs went off.
Wow.
His wife and kids were waiting near the finish line. They're okay. But at the time, he was the number two guy at the FBI in Boston.
Wow!
So he has a lot of hands-on experience. Exactly. Yeah, I think big thumbs up for him.
Next, the sexual harassment news of the day continues to be news that has to be updated every day. The Harvey Weinstein situation is this: the Weinstein Company is looking for somebody to buy him. The private equity deal that they were going to have fell through. The Hollywood studio has been thrown into turmoil because of Harvey Weinstein's criminal activities. This company could be one of the biggest, most successful movie studios a month ago. And now because Harvey Weinstein wanted people to watch him take a shower and couldn't keep his pants on and all the other disgusting things that have been alleged and crimes as well, they're on the verge of being out of business.
Yep.
Incredible fall.
It was in financial trouble before all of this was revealed. That's an important to keep in mind.
Not like this.
No, not like this.
Not like
struggling.
This. No, financial trouble before means you're looking for a buyer. Now they're over.
Mm-hmm. Boy. You know, so many businesses, too. A friend of mine at a local company here is in day two of a very intense sexual harassment training seminar. Because of this now, they put together, you know, there's sensitivity training and whatnot, but
just
she's a manager.
Interesting timing,
yes.
Or it just happened?
No, it's because of this. They just want to make sure that all the managers know that their employees feel safe and can go to any of them at any time.
All right, now here's where you can get into trouble. How do we feel about the former President Bush story? George H.W. Bush is a 93-year-old man in a wheelchair.
I don't know. This is a weird one.
But if you say this one's okay, then where do you draw the line,
no,
right?
I know. You can't.
George Bush, President Bush, sits in a wheelchair. He is physically unable to move around much at all anymore. And in photo ops, and everybody wants to take a picture with him, an actress named Heather Lind was standing next to him, and he patted her on the butt a couple of times and told a dirty joke, possibly two.
Yeah, I don't think this is a pattern of sexual harassment on behalf of the former president. Do you?
I think at some point, and this is where you get into dicey area, right? At some point, you got to go. He's a 93-year-old man in a wheelchair. Yeah, inappropriate. But he's a 93-year-old man in a wheelchair.
Right, right.
Now, it's been addressed, and he's had to respond to it, so that's a good thing.
He's apologized twice, I think.
Yeah. There's new news overnight tonight, or last night, I should say. There's a guy named Mark Halperin. Mark Halperin wrote the book called Game Change, turned into the movie with your favorite actress playing Sarah Palin.
I don't mind Julianne Moore. She's just my favorite lead.
Didn't she play Sarah Palin? Am I remembering that right?
She did.
Yeah, I think so. And he's also on a show called The Circus with John Heilemann. And it's one of these deals where he's kind of a political nerd, but a big shot nerd. Well, when he was in charge of politics at ABC News 10 years ago, and the previous two or three years to that, five women have now come forward to say that he sexually harassed them and that he did things like pressed up against them, grabbed them, and things of that nature. Heilemann came out and said, I did things that I shouldn't have done, and I apologize for it. I mean, this is the way it always works, right? Nobody apologizes ahead of time. They wait till it comes out, and then they apologize. Heilemann is now taking time to try to figure out what's next for him. So he's got some troubles this morning, and he should. New law went into effect yesterday in Honolulu. It's illegal to text while you cross the street. It costs you $35. You get a ticket.
I think it's a great idea. Yeah. Don't you?
How many times do you see people crossing every intersection?
At 5 in the morning, 4
in Chicago with their head down.
Yeah.
I see so many people walking like that into traffic. I mean, just everywhere. I don't know how they survive.
I saw a dude, head down, with a text. Cabbie hits a horn. He stops in the middle of the intersection. The light's green and flips off the cabbie. Now, how is that the cabbie's fault?
Cabbie's fault.
Hey, I'm finishing my text.
Hold on. I'm calling an Uber.
And then there's this. Six-bedroom, 5,110-square-foot Northside home, $1.8 million. It's just a block from a five-bedroom, 7,000-square-foot home with a famous neighbor. These are John Lester and Jake Arrieta's places. Lester's place worth about $3.8 million. Arrieta's place worth about $1.8. You can get Arrieta's now, include some beard hair that dropped while he was shaving. And last night's World Series game, epic. Five extra inning home runs.
How about that? Most ever in a postseason game in extra innings.
Did they think the game started later or something? They woke up late in that thing.
Did
that thing was 1-1.
Well, the game was in the, I want to say, two nights ago, game one.
By the way, Houston won.
Houston won it 7-6 in 11. Two nights ago, game one lasted 2 hours and 28 minutes. Last night, they were 2 hours, 28 minutes into it, and it was like the seventh inning, and they were just getting started.
1-1.
So home runs off Verlander, and you're thinking, okay, the Dodgers are going to win another one just the way they
Houston kept coming back.
They kept coming back on them.
And now it goes to Houston for the middle three starting tomorrow night, yes?
Tomorrow night.
Okay. What's temperature in Houston? Doesn't matter. Air conditioning in Houston.
There is.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Top six brought to you by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Man. A fabulously interesting woman is here with us, and you're going to meet her in just a second at 720 WGN. Mitzi Purdue is here. Is there a movie about your life yet?
Yeah, I love that film. Thank you.
Well, there should be. Mitzi Purdue is the daughter of one of the co-founders of the Sheraton Hotel. And her late husband is Frank Purdue from Purdue Chicken. But probably most importantly, your old friends at Orion Samuelson.
Longtime friends, and I wish you were here right now.
Yeah, so do we. You know, he's a busy guy. He drops by when he can. Got a brand new book called How to Make Your Family Business Last. You know a little something about this. How far back are we talking for the family businesses that you are tied to?
Well, the Sheraton Hotel chain, it began in the 1930s, but my family began as a family business in 1890. And the family's kept on very strong. We just had our 127th anniversary, our reunion. And then the Perdue family began as a business in 1920, and we're fifth generation.
How about that? Now, 1890, were your family innkeepers then?
No, they weren't. They were in real estate, and the Henderson Estate Company owned land in Manhattan.
What's the story of how the Sheraton Hotel Group got together? Was it specifically an investment they hoped would turn out to be something?
My father, it was a funny thing that he could never, my grandmother told my mother, don't marry Ernest because he'll never make anything for himself. You'll end up poor because you can't stick with anything.
Right.
Well, it wasn't until he was like in his 40s before he had any success at all, because he went from one thing to another. But then he bought a hotel in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and he made a success of it.
Was it meant to be, like he was always meant to be in the hospitality business, but he didn't know until it happened?
Well, actually not, because to the end of his days, he was a very shy person.
Is that right?
Yeah, and you would think that somebody who was such a public figure would never be in the hospitality industry. But somehow he was good at it, and this was in the Great Depression. Hotels were going bankrupt right and left. But I have a quick story, about what he did that made something that, you know, everybody else was going bankrupt, and yet he grew and grew and grew until at the time of his death, there were more than 100 hotels.
Sure.
When he'd take over a hotel, the first thing that he'd ever do with every hotel he ever bought was he'd assemble all the workers at the hotel in the great ballroom of the hotel. And he'd know ahead of time that every one of them was just seriously demoralized because, you know, a hotel goes bankrupt. You expect to lose your job. Yeah. That there would be house cleaning.
That's why you think you're being called to the ballroom.
Exactly.
Yeah, to get out.
Instead, what he'd do is his first words to them was, everybody here, you keep your job.
Wow.
And he said, I believe in you, and this hotel in 2 years is going to be the most popular hotel in the city, and you guys know how to do it. Nobody knows the hotel better than you do, and I believe in you. And
so an instant morale boost from zero to 60.
But then what I take to be just super about his approach to life, but in this case to the hotels, if you're taking over a hotel that's gone bankrupt, you have to invest an awful lot of money in refurbishing it. It's been run down.
Yeah.
The first money that he'd ever spend would be on the areas that nobody would ever see except the employees, because he felt that he wanted to signal to them how important he felt they were. So,
wow.
So the employee,
visionary.
Yeah. The employee dining rooms, the employee lockers, the showers, they would be that would be the first place that the money ever went, because his attitude was, what makes any organization from the top to the bottom is the people. And another thing that I just cherish that he used to say is that people have a compulsion to live either up to or down to your expectation. And another thing that he did was he was very good at keeping people. If you started with Sheraton, you stayed with Sheraton your whole life.
How about that?
That's really cool.
Well, that's really cool. Right? And there's no downside to that, because you can take a room full of 200 people and say, you're the core business and we want you to be happy and you all have jobs. And if you find out one of them is a knucklehead down the road, you deal with it at that point. So,
but it was a clean slate as far as he was concerned.
Sure. And everybody has a chance to earn their keep.
But I think that was part of the secret sauce of how he started from very small to a giant.
Wow. How'd you meet Frank Perdue?
I met him at a party in Washington. I was a rice grower at the time, and he was.
Did you know who he was?
Actually, I didn't.
Okay.
Which is kind of surprising, but I was living in California, a farm broadcaster, by the way.
Right.
But when we met and we talked, we decided that chicken and rice would go well together.
Did you have it at the wedding?
Well, as a matter of fact, yes. Okay. And we,
Frank, we're going to have to cater.
And then we got engaged quite rapidly. I had to leave this party in Washington early, and he arrived late, so we only overlapped by 10 minutes. But during that time, we decided to marry.
Oh, come
love
on.
It.
Serious.
Love at first sight?
It was some enchanted evening kind of thing.
Wow.
How soon after were you married?
Excuse me?
Soon after?
We met in, I guess, March and married in July.
Wow.
That's awesome. That's
and it was a blissfully happy marriage. I just admired him so much. And he was, you've seen his ads. You remember how fun he was in his ads?
Sure.
He was sort of self-deprecating, off-the-wall humor.
Playing the chicken nerd.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, and I always felt that he was just like the ads. He was funny and self-deprecating.
Right. But like, so likable.
But likable, yeah. Lovable. I mean,
and tasty.
No, I adored being married to him.
All right, so the book is, because of this fabulously interesting life, well, why wouldn't you know about this stuff? How to make your family business last? Because what happens is, when the founders pass, then everybody else gets a vote, and there usually is a child or a relative or somebody says, let's sell. So what do you do?
Okay, so here's what we do. And by the way, I'm not against selling companies.
If it's the right move.
If it's the right move. But I'm very much for keeping the families together, because we sold Sheraton in the 1960s.
Yep.
And the family is still as strong because we put it into other stuff.
Yep.
70% of family businesses won't make it to the next generation. And I think I know some of the reasons why they fail. And
sure.
I certainly know a lot of reasons why they keep on.
Right.
And the biggest reason that a family can continue is if they consciously encourage a culture where you think of that you're a steward. You think that relationships are more important than money.
Right.
Where you learn that you can't always be right. Where you learn that compromise is key. And when you just learn from childhood to treasure the relationship and the company. And I give in my book an awful lot of actually 60 different ways that you can do this.
60.
Yeah, and I'll give one that I worry that this isn't relevant if you're not in a family business, but in I think the biggest reason that the Hendersons, the Sheraton Hotel family, have continued for 127 years is the Henderson Estate Company had an endowed vacation, still has, so that we know that we're going to see each other once a year. And so whether somebody's in Beijing, which relatives are, or they're in Maine. We all get together. We know each other. We value each other. We treasure each other. And we don't leave it to accident that we know what's going on in each other's lives.
You also deal with the opioid addiction and the crisis in this country, the disaster and the travesty it is and the fallout from that.
Well, I have a lot to say about that.
Sure.
And this is from a lifetime of watching people, but also I do some minor volunteer work for the Center on Addiction and Substance Abuse.
Well, none of that's minor, so give yourself credit.
Yeah. Well, what we know about substance abuse is there are ways of preventing it, or at least decreasing the odds. And according to Columbia, the Center on Addiction and Substance Abuse, if you have five or more meals together with your family, your odds of your children doing substance abuse are just fabulously reduced compared to those who have one or no meals together.
Yeah, because
in the
there's
course
a
of
connectivity
the
to it. There's a simple connection because you know what each other is doing. You share feelings, emotions, concerns.
Yes.
And you have a mutual goal that everybody is thriving and happy and doing well. I agree with you. It's a simple solution that more people need to practice because I think as a country we have less meals together than ever before.
Oh, there's so many reasons to have meals together. But, you know, another thing that's not generally known, but that it's widely known by the people who study this, is that parents have more impact than they imagine. I mean, supposing you're fighting with your son and you're having a terrible time, you still have more influence on that child than you imagine. Because, and this is not me saying it, this is Joe Califano, founder of the Center on Addiction and
right.
Substance Abuse, that we know from millions of dollars worth of research that parents have much more influence. This is assuming that you take the time to have the influence.
Invest, right?
But when you take a stand, we don't do this, that it's foolish, that it's stupid, that this is what losers do. When you take a stand, that will influence your kids much more on average than teachers or police or law enforcement.
And kids are always watching. Always watching. They're always watching what you do, how you do what you do. And look, we know the opposite end of this too, right? We know that no matter how bad a relationship is between a parent and a child still wants that parent to succeed. The parent on some level you would hope wants the child to succeed. But you'll see horrible situations with parents where kids still love them, need their approval, want
yes.
their approval. So the long-term benefit is be a good parent, hold your family together, and it obviously ties back into what you write about business as well. But I like that you cover both. And you're a fabulously interesting woman, as I said at the top.
Thank you so much.
And Dave, will you play Frank Perdue in the movie?
I don't know. I'd leave that up to Mitzi.
You have to look like a chicken.
I've been told.
Nope, sorry. I'm the casting director.
You're saying no?
You're not enough chicken-like.
Okay, fair enough.
Mitzi Perdue, wife to the late, great Frank Perdue and daughter of one of the Sheraton Hotel's co-founders. New book's called How to Make Your Family Business Last. Get how many copies?
Not one. Get two, because you're careless, you'll lose one.
Yeah, that's a good point. I'm glad you brought that up.
By the way, they're available on Amazon. They're not available in bookstores.
Well, get them at Amazon, though.
Or even better, get them directly from me at my website, MitziPerdue.com, and I'll autograph them for you.
Very nice. Get your own personal copy. Well, let us know if you need anything. I know you don't, but it seems like it's a nice thing to say. Great to meet you.
I've loved being on. Thank you so much.
And we'll tell Orion hello. 6:35, more in a moment on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
Well, I think the press makes me more uncivil than I am. Would I approve waterboarding? You bet your ass I'd approve it. You know, people don't understand. I went to an Ivy League college.
But it's political bull.
I was a nice student.
I'd like to punch him in the face, I'll tell you.
I don't know what I said. I don't remember.
I did very well.
Crooked Hillary Clinton.
Little Marco.
Lion Ted Cruz. Lion Ted.
I'm a very intelligent person.
I know words. I had the best words.
I think the press creates a different image of Donald Trump than the real person.
They're bringing drugs. They're bringing crime. They're rapists.
He's a war hero.
5.5 years.
He's a war hero because he was captured. I like people that weren't captured, okay? I hate to tell you.
We have losers. We have losers.
What a charmer. Charming guy. Ivy Leaguer. You know, he's super smart. I don't know if you know that or not. And that's basically what smart people do. They tell you how smart they are. Chuck Todd joins us now. Chuck, you're super smart. I don't know if I've ever said that to you. Did you know you're super smart?
I don't think so. I didn't go to the best schools. I didn't go to Wharton, so I'm not very smart.
You've got words, too. You might not have the best words, but you have plenty of words.
The words we use, he doesn't like.
The WikiLeaks story, this analytics firm that the Trump campaign apparently paid $5 or $6 million after the after they said they stopped paying him, and they want distance between them. And, of course, video doesn't lie, and we've got video all over the place of the president as candidate talking about how much he loves WikiLeaks. How big a deal is this story?
It's about as big right now as what happened with the news that the Clinton campaign lawyer was helping to pay for the infamous dossier. Mm-hmm. They're incremental stories right now. They're churn, they're chum for the sharks in the media waters. But ultimately, it's about what Mueller proves, right? Doesn't matter who pays for the dossier. If Mueller proves the dossier true, and vice versa, Mueller's going to let us know what he has found out on contacts between WikiLeaks. I firmly believe an American helped Assange. There is no way those Podesta emails, the way they were released and how they were released, there is no way Assange did this on his own. You'd have had intimate knowledge of the political media landscape, intimate knowledge, not Russian spy knowledge. I'm talking about an American understanding the landscape.
Right.
And so, look, he's going to pursue these things. So I guess what I would say is, if this is, if it's what Mueller proves, I think all these stories here are potentially important, but it all depends on what Mueller proves.
Yeah, I agree with you 1,000% because there's two tracks here, right? There's the politics of it and the people that think the Clintons are always liars and dishonest and all of that. They're always going to believe that. The people that believe that Trump is always lying, they're always going to believe that.
There's not going to be a media bombshell that changes the narrative of the story. Until Mueller shows his work.
Right.
I really now believe that ultimately that's where we are, that even if all of us report because of what you just said, right? Because there's just 40% that are just going to, the Clintons are involved and just not believe much until it's sort of formally rolled out. And that's why I think ultimately there's like almost no media bombshell that will truly alter the public opinion on this story until Mueller shows his work.
And I ask you this every week, but as far as the timeline goes from the inside view inside the Beltway, nothing's changed in the Mueller thing. It happens when it happens.
Yeah, I firmly believe we're looking at next summer. At the soonest, he's going back at least to 2013 on these finances. It's so intricate. I think I read a report up to 40 people whose finances over 5 years in very complicated ways, and these appear to be very complicated money laundering-like schemes. There's no way he's going to be done by the end of the year. So that's why this smells like summer.
Does he ever sit down with the president?
100%. Because the president's lawyers have made the decision to look cooperative. I think those lawyers have talked him into, look, the best thing to do is for you to cooperate, because the worst case scenario, your campaign is proven to collude with Russia, then you personally need to look like A, you cooperated, and B, you didn't know about it. So, you know, let's assume that is what I just said is true. And we don't know that it's true, but a good lawyer has to assume his client is guilty potentially and has to figure out how to put him in the best possible light. Right. And what do? You cooperate to the fullest. And if you think your client does have plausible deniability, you do that. And they have offered to sit down with him. I think they're going to almost force Mueller to interview him because they want to look cooperative.
Talking with Chuck Todd, MTP Daily, of course, Meet the Press and the great podcast, 1947. And an amazing day this week in Congress, which now appears to be an old story. I'd like to think it's not, but when Bob Corker came out so directly against the president, and then Jeff Flake stood up and said, yeah, I'm out, there was a thought, at least for a brief naive moment by me, that maybe the floodgates have finally opened. But the cowards of Congress continue to win out. Will that change?
You know, I've said this to loved ones who ask me. I say this to friends on the Hill. I say this to folks who are hoping the president survives this. Ultimately, everybody has their own breaking point, as that you've noticed. And over time, if you look at the Republicans that have broken from Trump going back to, you did a very nice compilation of his highlights, shall mm-hmm. we say. And all the best words that he uses. Each one of these incidents causes him to lose somebody, right? And it's like, you're right, it's never been a flood. But look at it over a 15-month period. It's quite a long list of folks that have broken from him and not come back. And so I guess what I would say is, put it this way, I actually think the next person who makes you think for a brief moment, oh boy, the floodgates could open, right now, that person has probably publicly praising the president. My point is, I think there's no more never Trumpers for him to lose that can make any splash anymore. I think the next time we have one of these moments is when he alienates somebody that worked for him, who decides they don't have enough, and they get out in a very public way.
But here's the upside down.
I happen to think that's inevitable because it seems as if he can't go more than 2 weeks without causing consternation.
Sure. And in an extension of that, here's the upside-down universe we live in. Corker and Flake are going to be in the Senate for another year plus, and there's a question, well, they can hold a grudge against them. They could form a coalition with the Democrats. They could vote against anything in a way of jamming up Trump's agenda. I believe both Corker and Flake, if they believe it's right for Tennessee and Arizona and the country, will do the right thing. What I also believe is what I know, that when Trump feels he's offended, he'll hold a grudge no matter what happens and no matter how much he could benefit the people of this country. So he actually benefits by being a jerk.
Right now, I think he has. I think he's purging the party. I think he's cowed the party. I think there's no doubt they are right now politically running fear of him. And he's okay with this. You know, this is why you're right in that he, you know, is comfortable sort of playing this role. He, you know, look, some people are uncomfortable with the idea that they rule by fear. This is what he revels in, right? He's never had a lot of friends. And so he's had to, in his mind, do business as a bully his whole life. So he does politics as a bully, and this is how he does it. I happen to think it's going to cost him votes. I don't see he's alienating enough votes to kill tax reform in the Senate. And I don't see, because of his behavior, how conservative Democrats, say in Indiana, Joe Donnelly, or in North Dakota, Heidi Heitkamp, who I think in a normal, dysfunctional Washington would want to find a way to support this tax cut are not going to be able to bring themselves to stand next to the president, right, and sort of celebrate that thing. So I don't know how he gets it, puts together this coalition. He's short-term winning the political fight here inside his party, but I think the way he's winning is alienating people he still needs to vote for.
So along those lines, Chuck, the president today said to deliver a major speech on the nation's opioid epidemic. Is this diverting attention to all the negative that's going on or following through on a campaign promise?
Honestly, it's an important... Where's he been on this?
Yep.
I mean, you know, this is something that should have happened 3 or 4 months ago. So I certainly am not going to treat it as a, quote, diversion. If anything, on the politics of this, I'm wondering what's taken so long. I don't understand what took so long. You know, rhetorically, the fact of the matter is he did give this issue a lot more attention than Hillary Clinton did, way more attention than Hillary Clinton did. And I think it was a huge, if you want to, on substance, I think there is, you know, I think it took Democrats way too long to understand the impact of the story. But this goes to our gerrymandered society. The reason Republicans knew about this more is that it was hitting rural America first. And that's where Republican lawmakers are representing. So they were hearing the story first. But so where's the president been? So I don't see it as a diversion. I see it as, where have you been? And I'm wondering what he's doing today. Is it enough? He's not declaring a full national emergency.
Most importantly, Chuck, before you go, here's a hug. Could you imagine the Bears would be trending up and the Packers would be trending down?
Yeah, well, this is a weird NFL season, isn't it? There is not a single team that seems good other than the Eagles. Everybody else seems to be, like, swimming in the sea of mediocrity.
It's the race to 8-8.
Yeah, no, 8-8 might win the NFC North. The black, and it, by the way, it's actually now going to be the black and blue division again.
It's a true story, but if you guys call Favre and make nice, he could still come back. Plus, he's got those copper sleeves, so he's probably ready to rock.
I'll tell you this. I think Favre could get us a game. I don't know if he could survive 2 games. I actually think Favre could win a game.
So do I. I wasn't even kidding.
Yeah.
All right. Enjoy your weekend. Thank you, man.
Thanks, Steve. Talk
appreciate it. That's Chuck Todd, Packer fan. But we like him anyway. It's 6:55. Pat Brady will join me in a bit. Eric Edelstein as well. We got a bunch of stuff to talk about. Oh, and Rick Pearson.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
We have such great people. We have such a wonderful state. We have unlimited potential, except our system's broken. It's really not working. Our government's not working for people. I love Illinois, and I won't let these insiders, these career corrupt politicians, destroy our home. That's what they're doing, and we've got to stop it. And I don't care who I run against. I don't care who's got what kind of money. That doesn't matter. This is about changing the system. This is about fighting back and getting a better future for our children and grandchildren. And I'm all in for it.
I don't know if you've ever had this conversation, but let's say you sat around with friends and you said, okay, if you had $1 billion and your choice was enjoy the $1 billion or agree to another 4 years of being punched in the face, which would you choose? And apparently the governor's chosen punched in the face.
Well, I guess another way to look at it, if you had $4 billion.
Is that what it is, four?
No, it's four. That's J.B. Madigan or J.B. Pritzker. And you're going to go to Springfield and take orders from the boss. So that's another option.
And volunteering to do it, too.
Do we have
getting more money to do it.
You've got to check. I love this commercial. This commercial that, and who gets credit for this? Rounders people or is it?
Yeah, I think so.
Rounders people got a hold of the governors of Indiana, Missouri, and Wisconsin. Those governors have a specific point of view about jobs leaving Illinois for their states.
They said it couldn't be done. But it was crazy to think this place could be saved.
No, that's not it. That's not it.
That we should give up.
Wrong one. That's not it. It's the one where the governors of those states are saying,
okay,
thank you, Mike, for the jobs. See if you can find that one for me.
That's where Governor Walker said cheeseheads love Mike Madigan.
Right. And then there's a big thanks, Mike, at the end. Rick Pearson joins us. Good morning, Rick.
Good morning.
What's new in Springfield?
Busy day yesterday in Springfield and kind of a demonstration of what the Republican Party looks like in the post-House Bill 40 era, the era of social conservatives declaring their lack of allegiance to the governor. About a dozen overrides of various legislation that he vetoed. And while he was able to sustain one victory, a bill that he vetoed that would ban local right-to-work zones, that bill is coming back, and it's likely to get overridden next week.
So what do we make of that? What's what are people telling you?
Well, I mean, it's a sign of discontent with the governor that even though it was his money that helped rebuild the Republican Party, and for many of those rank-and-file Republican lawmakers, it was what helped them stay in office or helped get them elected, that they are not going to view his money as the way to sustain unity in the GOP ranks. It's going to be a very interesting spring session moving forward.
And exactly who politics? This is why people go, well, at least we've elected some smart people. No, we haven't. Because who do the Republicans think is their best hope going forward?
I don't know. You know, I mean, you've got
Madigan. Is that who they're pulling for? I mean, come on.
Well, I think what you're seeing is too is, you know, after the dysfunction after 2.5 years without a state budget, a big vote yesterday on a Rauner veto of Susana Mendoza's bill. She's the comptroller. There was legislation that requires state agencies to actually report every month on how many bills that they're holding back and haven't distributed for payment. Rauner vetoed that. He viewed it as overreach by one executive branch office into his office. That bill passed with the unanimous support. That bill got overridden with unanimous support. So right there, a sign there of a bill that Rauner really wanted to have, and it got overridden right there.
Pat, you were in Springfield a good portion of your time.
I was this week.
And what are the Republicans thinking?
Well, I think
you don't have to kumbaya and go three cheers for Governor Rauner every time he walks in the room, but the central question again remains. If not Rauner, who?
Well, a couple things. The vetoes, and I completely understand what Rick's saying, but the Democrats have a supermajority in the Senate and a majority in the House. So the overrides, even the 112 to nothing, a little surprising. But some of the other ones, not so, because you only have to peel off a couple of Republicans. But I think there's only two or three Republicans that are vocally, maybe only two, in the Illinois House that say they're not going to support the governor. So overwhelmingly, the Republicans do support the governor. I think some of these votes...
Well, who are the two Republicans that aren't supporting the governor?
Well, Jeannie Ives and David McSweeney.
Okay, so what is their plan?
There is no plan. And Rick could speak to this. Never in my lifetime...
Well, this is why Springfield continues to spin.
Yeah. These two like to identify... I think the Republicans agree on a lot more than they disagree. And for some reason, they get to define what conservatism is, and nobody else can be in their litmus test club. Well, that's not how it works. But I totally understand what Rick is saying, because this was the veto session. That some of those are difficult votes for the governor, I'm sure, to accept.
You know, Rick, I don't know if you know, I'm a big Mike Madigan fan from a long time back. Let me just play for you. You found that commercial, right?
Let me just play for you
this commercial we talked about, and then more with Rick Pearson. Here are the governors of the surrounding states thanking Mike.
We want to say thank you.
Thanks, Mike Madigan.
Thank you.
For raising Illinois taxes.
For blocking Rauner's reforms.
And helping create new jobs in Indiana.
In Wisconsin.
In Missouri.
Our economy's on fire.
We're growing good jobs.
And we're growing union jobs faster than Illinois.
So we owe you.
Huge.
Hoosiers love you, Mike Madigan.
Cheeseheads love you, Madigan.
Big fans here in Missouri. Big time. Thank you, Mike.
Thanks, Mike.
He must have lost his mind when he heard that. Have you heard anything about Madigan's reaction to that?
Well, he did respond to it, and he basically said that, you know, this is him trying to reach out to other states that have lesser working conditions, lower wages, and pushing those kinds of people as part of his agenda to do the same here in Illinois. What I think is kind of interesting, and I think it's a great ad, but that having been said, you run that ad, this is the same time that the governor is all in on Amazon second headquarters.
Right.
And so on one hand, He goes all over the place saying there is no better place than Illinois for Amazon to locate, bar none. Everything, the education, the technical support, everything is here in Illinois. And then you run this ad that basically says, business, go elsewhere, because I can't do anything. And it really is a kind of a tacit acknowledgement that he's governor, and he can't do anything.
Well, but I don't disagree with what you're saying on the surface, but I also think there's a reason Amazon is Amazon, and I think Amazon's decision is not going to be based on what they think Mike Madigan or Bruce Rauner can do. It's what they can do in Illinois.
Well, but this does follow this constant trend of the governor really talking about how bad Illinois is and not really projecting a positive image for the state.
Yeah, but Rick, I'm not going to let your facts get in the way of how much I enjoyed that commercial.
I understand. And like I said, I think it's a good commercial, too.
Eric Adelstein's here. You make TV commercials for politicians, and you're one of the best that's ever done it. Even you have to admit that's a great commercial.
Well, there's a line in our business is yes. that some ads win awards and some ads win elections. Oh. I think this is a clever ad, a great concept, and I think it's executed very well. But to me, I'm kind of with Rick. It's a stunning concession by an incumbent governor that he has no power, that he's lost jobs in the state he governs, and that yet he wants four more years, and he's blaming someone else. Sorry, I didn't mean to drop my G there. That was unintentional.
That was a subtle
people.
Signal from you.
But I think that if he were a challenger running as an outsider, that'd be a good ad. But he's the governor of the state who's basically conceding, I have no power. I've lost jobs under my realm. And you know what? It's someone else's fault, but give me four more years.
Wait a minute. There's another argument to be made that Mike Madigan has about an 18% approval rating. And most people in the state now know who he is and how much power he truly has, how he has too much power. And I think this puts him in a good position. I have been trying. I will continue to fight for you. But unless we change, get rid of some of these people that have been there since 1970, nothing's going to change. I don't think it's a concession. I think it's just building on what he's already established.
And if Amazon wants to come to Illinois, they're going to go into a room and they're going to give him a hard time about it. And then they're going to say, well, what's in it for us if we do this? And this will be a negotiating point, which could cost something. Right. I would grant you that. But this ad is not going to keep Amazon from coming to Illinois.
But remember, all these incentives have to be improved by the legislature. And let's see if they actually get it, what Madigan will do. Will he hold this up just to help himself politically? Or is he going to let this go through?
I'm not saying this ad is going to cost us Amazon. Mm-hmm. All I'm saying is this is the conundrum of messaging that faces this governor.
You're absolutely right.
That, here you are running for a second term. What are your accomplishments? How much have you changed? What have you done to change Illinois? And the response is, I can't do anything because it's Mike Madigan. That's the response. And is that kind of the, aspirational second term kind of response you normally hear from a governor who's seeking re-election?
Yeah, but nobody in this country, Madigan is the last machine politician left in the country. And nobody in this country has to deal with what we deal with. A guy that's been there for
47
years.
No,
the reality is this. But you guys know what? This is what the people outside the liberal bubble get this. And they're sick of a guy that won't even agree to term limits. He won't give the governor any political victories because he controls the whole process.
But I would also take it a step further, and that is there is no response that Madigan can make to that commercial that doesn't include, yes, I am in charge of the state, something he's denied forever.
But here's
so he can't respond.
Here's what's fascinating. I think Pat's making Rick's point. In his defense of Rauner getting four more years, you haven't heard one thing of anything that's been accomplished.
Well, you didn't give me a
chance.
Hold on,
let me finish.
Do it. I can do it, yeah.
It's all about their entire reelection campaign is based on we're going to blame Mike Madigan. Now, that may work.
It got us five seats in the last
But when you when you have nothing to run on, you run against the other guys. And I think the lesson of 2016 is, in the presidential level, it's not enough just to be against something. You got to be for something. And I think Bruce Rauner's problem is he doesn't have a record to run on, so he's going to run on the fact that he's been completely failed and blame someone else for it. And I thought, it might work. It could.
Well, hey,
but I think it's a bad strategy.
The difference, though, between this and 16 is they're going to run J.B. Madigan, which is going to be J.B. Pritzker if your guy doesn't win, which I actually hope he does. And J.B. Pritzker is Madigan's candidate. So this is going to be a war between Governor Rauner and Speaker Madigan. And in that race, in that war, Governor Rauner wins because I think the people of this state are tuned in with how Springfield works now.
Look, we're a long way till March, and I'm hopeful that that it's Kennedy. But
did
whoever
you really say made Pearson's point, that really irritates me.
Sorry, but I mean, I just think that, you know, the thing you give Rahner credit for is he's always been very disciplined, and he's pegged his entire re-election on blaming Mike Madigan, and it might work. It might, but I'm just saying.
But it's also true.
It's not true. He's the governor. I don't buy it. Governor is the most powerful person in the state of Illinois.
He sits
in the big chair.
He didn't give him a budget. He never gave him. He never came up with a budget.
It's the governor's job.
No,
it's in the Constitution. It's the governor's job to write a budget.
All right, if I can go back to Schoolhouse Rock with you, buddy. But they are supposed to come up with some kind of budget.
There is never Constitution.
I'm going to turn off both of your microphones. And you're going to go sit in the car. We'll be back in a moment. Rick Pearson, thank you, my friend. Chicago Tribune, what are you doing on Sunday?
I'm actually got Fred Hochberg. He's the former president and CEO of the Export-Import Bank of the United States. We're going to talk about why did trade become such a dirty word for Republicans after being part of their vocabulary all this time. Also have Pat Brady on for an encore performance. And also we'll be speaking to Democratic Congressman Raja Krishnamoorthy about what's going on with tax reform from the Democratic side in Washington.
And the Import-Export Bank still has those free toasters with your deposit. So that's cool. If you can get in there. Thank you, Rick. Talk to you later.
The Steve Cochran Show.
We have actually great unity in the Republican Party. Yesterday I was... Oh, that's okay. Look, you know, they have to do their thing. We have great unity. If you look at what happened yesterday at the meeting, we had, I guess, virtually every senator, including John McCain. We had a great conversation yesterday, John McCain and myself, about the military. I think we had I called it a love fest. It was almost a love fest. Maybe it was a love fest. But we get standing ovations. There is great unity. I mean, if you look at the Democrats with Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton, that's a mess. There's great unity in the Republican Party.
Love will keep us together.
Is he captain or Tennille? By the way, does he think the election's still going on? He knows that's over, right?
I'm not sure.
You know how you can tell he's lying?
Because his lips are moving?
Yeah.
He does make a point, though, that...
Wait a second.
He does make a point.
When?
Let me finish here, young man. That the Democrats are going to have, maybe not right now, but their own issues with the far left of the Bernie Sanders wing. It's going to happen.
True. No, it's true.
And they're out there.
Right now, the youngest, most vigorous Democrat ready to rock is Bernie Sanders, and he will cross the street against traffic if he thinks there's a camera standing there that wants his opinion on something.
Are you really looking at the shiny object he's trying to make you look at instead of what we're really talking about?
Well, we're talking about two things here. One is the fact that Jeff Flake and Bob Corker stood up this week and did what the other 500-plus members of Congress, 543 if you're counting, depending on who shows up for work, didn't do. And that stand up and go, what the hell are we doing? This is the United States of America. What sort of Twilight Zone world are we living in that we don't understand? We have a huge problem on our hands. They spoke out. It looked for about 30 seconds like the dam would break and everybody would show up and know Corker and Flaker yesterday's news. Where are the Republicans? Where are the Democrats? Where is the leadership? Why is Congress filled with cowards? Go ahead. Discuss. Treat it like a book club.
Well, I mean, here's what I would say. I think Flake's speech was great, and it was impressive, and it was dead on. But it's a win for Trump. I hate to say it. I mean, he's chasing reasonable voices who want to stand up to him. I think the most disturbing thing to me is there is not one, I could be wrong, but from what I've read and analyzed, there's not one prominent Republican who's on the ballot next year in 2018 who has broken with Trump. Not one. And so until there's an electoral price to be paid for sticking with Trump, I think you're going to see this kind of cowardice. If we look to an equivalent moment in American history, maybe there isn't one.
I like how you anticipate my rant.
Yeah, maybe there isn't one. But the McCarthy years in the 50s,
yes,
when there was a prominent figure that everyone was scared of who lied out his butt and didn't care just to score political points, was Joe McCarthy. But that took 4 years before people in power, people in his party, people in Congress were willing to stand up and say, have you no shame, that's enough. Four years.
Memory selective, even in this case.
Yeah, and my point is,
in other words, when I go, it's never been worse than this. Well, maybe it has.
Well, I don't know whether it's worse or not. He wasn't the president of the United States. He was a senator. But even General Eisenhower, President Eisenhower at the time, was fearful of standing up to McCarthy. My point is, until there's an electoral price to be paid for being with the crazy guy, you don't see courage from politicians. I would have rather seen Flake say, I'm going to stay and fight, and I may lose, but I'm going to go down swinging and do this. And sadly, it is a win for Trump in many ways.
As boring as it sounds, and it is, the problem is these districts that are people are drawn for the members of Congress don't allow for you to do that. You want to stay within your base. And right now, he still has the president a 77% approval rating amongst Republicans. So just it's political. To keep your political viability, you just don't say anything.
So you count on, so people understand what we're talking about here, you count on the 30% who care enough to show up and vote for the far right or the far left, and you also count on the apathy of the 65% that don't.
Exactly.
That's the process. Now, here's the thing I don't understand. Congress has the approval rating of what, toe fungus at this point, somewhere around there?
I think it's blood relatives.
Yeah.
It's legitimate. It's in the high teens?
Yep. Maybe the high teens.
Well, the Republican brand right now in the polls I've seen just recently is at 29%.
Okay, what are the perks? What job are you protecting at this point? You're deemed a failure by the people that are in your district and everybody else. Are you proud to go to go somewhere and say, I'm a member of the House of Representatives?
Like, the Congress
but
is,
no, I'm serious. It's
never
a serious,
popular.
But a serious question. Why is it such a great job anymore? Why put your personal integrity, your future, your grandkids' hopes for your future, the people that love you look you in the face and go, why don't you be a man or a woman and stand up? Why even fight for the job?
A couple things. I think there are a lot of very fundamentally decent people, both in the United States Congress and in Springfield, and are true public servants and want to get something done. And there actually are getting some things done. And it doesn't really serve their constituents right now to stand up and start screaming at the President of the United States. I mean, that's the answer I have for right now. I don't know what's going to happen, but maybe it's going to be the midterms. But right now, I'm ready for, and I hope we have, an honest debate within the Republican Party about the direction of the party. Do we want to be the Trump Party, which is not a conservative movement? It's a nationalistic, isolationist kind of view. Or do we want to go back to what brought us a lot of electoral success, more of the Reagan view of the world? And that's exactly where we're at. I hope we have that debate. And when I said early on, the Democrats are going to have the same debate. It's just not as visible.
Yeah, that's
right.
Fair. I do think taking, again, in the boring, you know, government reform stuff, I'd take Pat's idea one step further, which is we ought to have term limits for members of Congress as well. Why is it okay
agree.
For the president?
Because
wait. How about for Mike Madigan?
There should be term limits everywhere.
Term limits should be everywhere.
Look, I think there should be. Here's the thing.
If you term limit the president and the governors in most states, why wouldn't you term limit
Because every political scientist since the 50s who started analyzing Congress said, fundamentally, the job of Congress is to get reelected. That is the job if you are in Congress.
And it's gotten worse with the money.
It's gotten worse with the money, no question about it. But that is the fundamental motivation. It's human nature. There are good people there who are trying to do good things. But if your job is just to get reelected every 2 years, you're not going to get anything done. I don't think
there's a historical reason for that, because you wanted the House lower chamber to be more responsive.
Of course. But I think you could do that with some term limits, even if it's a decade, something, but that it at least
maybe leadership term limits too.
Yeah, and leadership term limits. But that's the only way I think we start to get out of this.
Well, this goes to my question for the Democrats too. The idea that the Democrats can sit around and watch Trump burn the country down and somehow have a win next fall. How do you define a win?
You know how bad this has gotten, Stephen? And everybody has reached their tipping point. I did like the day he announced, but there's articles out yesterday about the U.S. attorneys, the lead federal prosecutors in each of the district. Did he actually personally interviewed the United States attorney candidates that were going to go to New York, the ones that might affect
his president?
The president did.
Oh, my goodness.
Which, to me, is the same thing he did with Comey. Are you loyal to me? I'm not saying these people would take that question and answer it the wrong way, but he doesn't have a fundamental understanding of the different branches of government, their roles, and the ethical responsibility.
He doesn't want to understand it. His fundamental is, how is today going to affect me? Not how can I do something for the United States of America? How can I be a better president today? What do I need to do for Donald Trump today? He's the same guy he was in 1980 as he is in 2017.
There's a great article.
And he wasn't a good guy in 1980.
Peggy Noonan wrote a great article last week about comparing him to Sarah Palin on the popularity. And there's no base level of support for incompetence. So at some point, the bottom does fall out.
Okay, how do these new candidates, this resurgence that we had after the last election, Democrat and Republican, women saying, you know, I want to make a difference, I want to run for something. How do they stay viable with no money? I mean, you saw Mayor Pouard drop out because he didn't
and
have
blocked
the money.
Out.
And no experience.
Right. Well, the money's a problem. I mean, it is a huge problem. And unfortunately, the U.S. Supreme Court has basically ruled that, you know, corporations have free speech. And, you know, if you have a bigger checkbook, you have a bigger First Amendment right. That is a huge, huge problem. I do think there is encouraging signs. There's grassroots money that's being raised. I mean, like Sanders or not, you know, his contributions came from millions and millions of people at very low dollars. I think the political economy is getting broader, so it isn't just a bunch of fat cats. But look, I don't want to sugarcoat it. When you have people who are spending millions and millions of dollars of their own personal money with no restrictions, it does choke out other voices. It's just a fact of life.
And here's what the Republicans need to do. They need to get these donors that are the more centrist, the people that aren't the right-wing nut jobs, to get off the dime and start contributing and supporting some of these centrist candidates. Otherwise, with guys like Corker and Flake leaving, there's going to be nothing left.
Right.
So the middle of our party, in conjunction probably with some conservative Democrats, need to get together and say, we are done with this. Let's start writing some checks. Let's start supporting these candidates. They're going to represent the majority of the country, not the right or the left wing.
Right, and the 60% listening who do have wives and go, I don't have time to go vote in the primary. Well, you better find time because everybody's got to make a dent and make a change and get involved somehow because you can't just sit back and go, well, what happened? That's what this entire year's been about. Eric Adelstein and Pat Brady are here. Pat, name of your company is?
Next Generation Strategies.
And you do mostly kids' birthday parties, or what do you do there?
Government affairs, where business meets government.
All right. And Eric, your company?
AL Media.
Let me get your microphone on. Say it again.
AL Media. We do bar mitzvahs, brisses, birthday parties as well.
The brisk business is brisk.
It is brisk.
Yes, that's exactly right. All right, so let me just come full circle here and ask you about the Lincoln Forum. Who is the next guest?
Chris Kennedy.
Chris Kennedy, who's running for governor.
Running for governor. Yeah,
well, we talked a little about Pritzker, talked a little about Rauner. Eric,
he's got a lot of good ideas, so it should be a great discussion.
Eric, what's the update on this campaign?
It's going well. He's running all over the state. They have a big women's forum going on today. He's going to be the Lincoln Forum keynote, talking about property tax reform, talking about education reform, talking about gun violence, really the only candidate who's put out a plan on what do we do about this epidemic. So I think it'll be an interesting event. Hopefully people can come.
Did you have an opportunity to ask him about the release of his uncle's private papers?
You know, I have not. We have not talked about that. I know that happens today. Whether that's going to be a nothing burger or something salacious, I don't know. I mean, it's always...
Has the Kennedy family made an official statement about how they feel about it?
Not that I'm aware of. You know, it's always interesting because for everybody, it's history, and for them, it's personal, you know, and it ends up being kind of intrusive. But obviously, that it's a part of American history. And we'll see what's in there. I'm not sure what the family response will be.
I saw Caroline Kennedy interviewed, and she was really good. But she's talked about, oh, my father.
Yeah.
Referring to, it sounded so odd to hear that.
I know, Chris said, talks about my uncle.
Yeah,
you know, my uncle and my father.
It's, my dad, yeah.
But, you know, it's personal. And it's easy to see that.
Well, the kids were saying my grandfather.
Right, right.
Which was really, because you never imagined, was he 46 when he died?
Right, but they, you know, grew up with those tragedies.
Was what, 5 years old when Bobby was killed?
He was 5 or 6 when his father was killed. Yeah. Yeah.
How old was his father? Not 50 yet, was he?
No, he was 43, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see if those papers, in fact, get stopped today or they officially come out. It looks like they will be released. First section of those coming later today. All right, tickets and information at the Lincoln Forum. Trying to make public policy a good time.
LincolnForum.org.
You guys are doing a nice job of that. LincolnForum.org. Nice to see both of you.
Thanks.
Good luck with an express. It's 8:01, and the news is next on 720 WGN.
Ladies and gentlemen,
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world,
some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you?
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, Hollywood. You know I love you more than what I should. Kiss
8:14 now, and Dean Richards is live at Channel 9 because that's where he works.
I'm live at Channel 9 because that's where I work.
Wow, what a weird echo. So I'm watching the game last night, game 2 of the World Series,
I must have missed it. Don't they normally show a bunch of stars in the stands?
Oh, I saw some.
Who was there?
I saw Jason Bateman. I saw him quite a bit.
Who else?
I saw Jerry Seinfeld.
Jerry Seinfeld was there.
I saw Lady Gaga.
Lady Gaga, Jason Bateman, and Jerry Seinfeld all went to the game together.
Well, no, they were going to tell a joke.
There were more than that. Yeah,
Justin Timberlake.
Justin Timberlake was there.
JT,
if you're too busy to say the actual name. Ice Cube.
Ice Cube was at the game.
Ice Cube. And
how
also,
did any regular people get tickets to this game?
And, of course, my only reason for watching any Dodgers game on the rare occasions that I do, but now in the World Series, is just to see Larry King sitting behind home plate.
Larry King in 100-degree heat in long sleeves. Because it gets chilly.
I'm sitting here in my suspenders. Hello, Schenectady.
Somebody told me Mary Hart was with him.
Mary Hart from...
Really?
Well, that was last year she was sitting with him.
Oh.
Are they a couple?
I don't know, but I remember
Larry
that.
Isn't Larry still married?
I believe so.
But
number eight?
During the NLCS last year against the Cubs...
So they're baseball buddies.
Apparently.
Right.
Maybe she's a caretaker.
I don't think Larry needs a caretaker. He's as fit as a fiddle. He's not lost a step.
Oh, my gosh. It was Mary Hart.
Was it Mary
You're
Hart?
Absolutely right. Of course. Yeah, Mary Hart. To the Twitterverse. There you go.
Mary Hart and Larry King. Mm-mm. Is Larry shrinking on live TV behind home plate?
That's what I said, that he might need a caretaker. He does seem to be shrinking.
Yes.
I ever met him?
I thought he announced that he had cancer.
Oh, does he really?
Yeah, he has lung cancer, I believe.
Did not know that.
Last month he announced it.
Well, that's a bad story.
Don't you feel bad
now? I feel bad.
Yeah.
Well, we didn't know.
Stage one.
We didn't know until just now.
Maybe that is a caretaker then.
So.
That's Mary Hart.
Yeah.
She's taking care of other things.
Whoa.
I retract what? Everything I just said.
I don't know. She's
But you're trying to start a rumor that
I'm just going with Twitter.
Larry King and Mary Hart are together? Larry King, I've met Larry and Adam on the show many times, but my favorite thing ever, in regards to Larry King was being at Don Rickles' daughter's wedding in Hollywood and Larry King going around and introducing himself to people. Hello, Larry King.
Hello.
Larry, everyone knows who you are.
Hello.
These are your friends.
I love that he wears a long sleeve shirt. It's like 100 degrees.
100 degrees.
At Dodger Stadium.
Yeah.
He's got a long sleeve shirt
but
on.
If he's sick, maybe he is cold, right?
Maybe undergoing treatment or something.
Yeah.
He revealed that he has stage one lung cancer and had successful surgery this past summer, Steve.
Well, I'm glad he's at the game. It's pretty impressive, a guy his age out after that.
Telling everyone to go get a chest x-ray.
Get a chest x-ray. Hello. Tulsa, hello.
Connected.
Fats Domino passed away yesterday. He had a good run, didn't he?
He was 89 years old.
That's a good run.
That's a pretty good run. He is, you know, truly, the term legendary performer is tossed around way too much, but he is truly one of the great legendary performers of all time. If you think back, you know, to the 1950s and the 1960s, for an African-American performer to break through with so many hit songs, Blueberry Hill, Ain't That a Shame, I'm walking to New Orleans.
Kansas City.
I'm walking over there, I'm walking over there.
We're walking.
His whole album called Walking, he was a pioneer. I'm Sitting Down from Walking was one of my favorite follow-up hits.
He had one of the first Walkmans. I don't know if you know that.
He was the first Walkman.
Yeah, and it was actually a record player that one of his assistants carried with a really long cord.
The long extension cord, say. He was a pioneer of boogie-woogie piano. People like John Lennon worshipped him. John Lennon was quoted in an interview saying that Ain't That a Shame was the first song that he ever learned to play.
And here's the deal. Chuck Berry, Little Richard, James Brown, Fats Domino. It's about a dozen guys, some of the great black artists of all time, but in that era, made nothing. Nothing.
Yep.
Some of the worst show business racism occurred in that era, and their stuff was stolen.
And so influential, completely stolen, so influential on everybody else who came along.
Yep.
Stole their style of music, and they became, big performers as a result of it all. But Fats Domino had a good career.
He did.
He worked nonstop throughout his entire life. His entire life, he was among the very first to be inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. He got a Grammy Lifetime Achievement Award, sold more than 65 million albums.
And 89, a good run.
89 years old. He was involved when Hurricane Katrina hit New Orleans, where he has always lived. He was very much affected by that. And lost everything. He lost a lot of his memorabilia. He lost a lot of the history of his career in the floods that took place there. A couple of years after that, his wife passed away. So his last few years have not been great ones. But he always had that signature smile on his face. And his songs are among the greatest hits of all time. Truly among the greatest of all time.
I'm being told now, and we'll come back, we'll talk about a bunch of other show business stories and Dean's interview with Rachel Ray. And Dean, by the way, still smells like Rachel Ray's kitchen.
Like salami.
Yeah.
I still smell like salami.
But I'm told because there were so many A-list stars at the game last night, Zomfir, Otis the Drunk, and Ebb from Green Acres couldn't get tickets.
I knew a guy named
couldn't get
Zomfir.
Tickets. No way. Otis the Drunk can't get in?
Can't get tickets. You knew a guy named Zomfir?
Zomfir, master of the pan flute. No, I really, in college, that was his name.
Was that his first and last name, or just his first name?
I'm thinking
name?
Now it might have been a nickname, but everyone just called him Zomfir.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, it must be. But he played the pan flute?
No, he drank a lot, but...
Well, that's sort of the same. Now a picture's popped up of Larry King with Slim Whitman. I don't know. I'm very confused by all of this. It's 8:20 more with Dean in a second on 720 WGN. Back to Dean. Jill Goodacre and her husband Eric Connick announcing this morning that she's battling breast cancer, so good luck to them.
Yeah, apparently she's doing okay. Discovered early, that's the key to it all.
Corey Feldman's in the news.
Corey Feldman, you know, with all this talk of sexual assault lately, Corey Feldman's name has come up. Literally for years, Corey Feldman has been talking about how he was sexually assaulted as a child actor. He and Corey Haim. And really, people just kind of dismissed it, didn't pay attention to it.
Because he was kooky Corey Feldman.
Because his behavior can be a little bit erratic, but it kind of underlines what a lot of people are now talking about, that if you bring up sexual assault, people don't take you seriously. They, you know, classify you in a certain way. So Corey Feldman now is on a campaign to bring down what he calls a Hollywood pedophile ring that he's been aware of since he was a child actor. He said that he can name six people specifically, including one person who is still very powerful. And he says since announcing this campaign, he has been arrested and almost killed. That two trucks came speeding at him in a crossway this week. So that's what he's trying to raise some money for a documentary on child abuse in Hollywood, but that's what's going on with Corey Feldman.
You'd think it would be ripe for that kind of terrible thing because there's so many kids who are needed to be in these roles and parents who maybe aren't on set all the time and minders who aren't paying all the attention, so it's a bad setup.
I've been talking about this a lot over the last couple of weeks because people have been asking me about it, and the fact it exists that there are plenty of predators, not just in Hollywood, not just in show business, in every business. There are lots of predators, and there are lots of people who get themselves into bad situations. I'm not blaming them for it, but they unawarely so get themselves into bad situations where, you know, where the predators can, you know, exercise their illness.
Mark Halperin, who is on The Circus, the Showtime political show, which is a big hit. He's on Morning Joe on MSNBC with our friend, our friends, I should say. And also, he is a successful author and been making a lot of money as a political expert for a long time. He had to come out and apologize and step down from his NBC duties at a minimum because he's admitted to sexually harassing up to five women, maybe more, while he was at ABC.
Yeah, five women have come forward in claiming that they were sexually harassed by Mark Halperin. So he's out of the position right now, and you know, we'll see how the investigation.
Also, the author of Game Changer, co-author of Game Change, which turned into a movie. Yeah. John Mayer sober for a year. Good for him.
Yeah, you know, just great news. He celebrated 1 year of sobriety, says he's feeling great. He really just decided to give drinking a break. He didn't really feel like he had a problem, but he said he just wanted to give it a break and is reminding people that it's okay to say no thank you.
Yeah, I mean, I don't drink hardly ever. I mean, anything.
Not even
water,
right now.
No fluids whatsoever.
Not even right now for the last 3 hours, because it kind of sounds like you have been.
Gets a little dizzy around this time of the morning.
A lot of people say that I've been drinking for 1,018 shows. I say, prove it. The gender of a Kardashian baby has been revealed. I guess I'd have to say which baby.
Well, because they're popping up everywhere.
Multiple Kardashian pregnancies.
All the Kardashian sisters right now are, Khloe Kardashian's pregnant. Kim mm-hmm. is pregnant through surrogate. Kylie Jenner is also pregnant. But yesterday, Steve, I don't even know how they didn't break into the news and have this in the what does Wolf Blitzer call that? The workout room, the rumpus
the
room,
situation.
Oh, it's whatever it's called.
By the way, my costume this weekend, werewolf Blitzer is catching on like crazy.
I love that.
Khloe Kardashian and her boyfriend Tristan Thompson uh-huh. announced yesterday they are having a baby boy. A boy in the Kardashian.
A boy
family.
Kardashian.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, that's new.
Haven't had one of those in a while.
Well, I'm very glad I know, and I'm surprised my Kardashian beeper didn't go off. I actually wear an old school 80s beeper whenever there's Kardashian news that goes off.
How do we not have our breaking news music for big stuff like that?
Jake refused. He could have. He just said no.
Good enough for me.
You and Rachel Ray were hanging out.
Last week, I went to New York City. That might have been the day, Steve, that I forgot to tell you that I wasn't going to be on.
Yeah, I think that was the day. Yeah.
I think that was the day.
That was probably the day.
Somehow forgot to tell Steve.
What am I forgetting that I do every day at 8:10 and 8:20?
Did I leave the bathtub
what
running?
What am I forgetting?
Did I not tell Steve that I'm not going to be here? That's when I was in New York for the taping of the Rachel Ray 2000th episode that took place. It was a big, huge show. You may have seen some of the promos. Oprah Winfrey is one of the guests on the show. She did a couple of segments. They have a super surprise, legendary musical performer who's going to be on the show, whose name rhymes with Stony Schmenet.
Oh, no kidding. I wonder if he knows Tony Bennett.
I couldn't tell you. I wouldn't want to reveal,
yeah.
Even though I have been all morning on TV.
Mm-hmm.
Also, Rachel's celebrity crush turns up on the show, surprises her.
Yep, it's me.
And they practically made out on the set.
Yep, we did.
Right in front of her husband.
Yep, that's true.
A really fun show. Oh, you know what else they did? The entire audience got this amazing gift that they announced at the end of the show. Which is on 10 o'clock.
A George Foreman grill.
On WGN. Even bigger than that.
What is it?
It's hard to believe. I think they get a free trip someplace.
What?
A free trip someplace out of the United States. The entire audience.
Wow, that's cool. And did Oprah get a chance to catch up?
I did not. Oprah was shuffled off the set, and I was tackled by one of her security people before I had a chance to say hello to my old friend.
How about you and Shnoni Schnedit?
Shnoni Schmenet also was shuffled off the set.
Yeah, you got to be careful. That's how he walks.
Very quickly. He wasn't feeling great. They said he had a little cold, so he wasn't too chatty with anybody. But he did sing, and oh my gosh, he sounded amazing. So that's all on WGN-TV this morning. But we sat down and talked with Rachel about her show, her longevity, and what's made her show tick for so long.
We want people to see themselves. You know, we want a show that isn't always about celebrity. And when celebrities do come on, we want them to play and forget that they're celebrities. You know, we want to know what they eat or what they're afraid of or, you know, what makes them giggle instead of just letting them, run a clip or something.
I've heard you talk about your celebrity crush on Tom Jones.
And 50 Cent. But Tom Jones, I have had a crush on since I was 3. And I used to hate wearing dresses. I still do, actually. But as a child, the only way my mom could get me in a dress was if I knew the Tom Jones show was coming on. I'd go put my dress on because I thought Tom could see me.
You would dress up to watch the Tom Jones show?
Because I thought Tom could see me. It's very important that I looked nice for him.
And you said, this is what I learned about Rachel Ray today. You said that your favorite song, I thought was going to be It's Not Unusual.
No.
It's
Delilah.
She's a Lady, one of his huge songs.
The Lady He Murders, and then blames her.
The Misogynist
yeah.
song
uh-huh.
is
yeah.
the, was your favorite song.
Yeah,
that.
And I used to walk around completely inappropriately yeah. singing it.
Do you still remember the words?
Oh, of course. No. Of course I know Delilah. And no, we're not singing that.
Oh.
Wow, looks like you two had a good time.
We did have a good time. That's why I smelled like salami when I left there.
All right, man, talk to you later.
Bye.
That's Dean. We're back with the big story next at 720 WGN.
Let's go.
3, 2, 1.
The Steve Cochran Show presents Breakfast with a Blackhawk, sponsored by MB Financial Bank. MB means business.
Well, lots of new faces on the Hawks this year. Dave, I'm going to have you take the first question and introduce our guest on Breakfast with the Blackhawks, sponsored by MB Financial Bank. And by the way, congratulations and thank you to MB Financial Bank. The new arena that was just opened by the Hawks is going to be the MB Financial Bank, or is the MB Financial Bank Arena.
How about that?
That's great.
Which will be a community facility.
Very cool for them to step up.
Practice facility for the Blackhawks as well. Lance Boma is no stranger to the National Hockey League. Has
you
spent
and I
six
know it.
Years, yes, 6 years with the Calgary Flames, and now in his first season with the Chicago Blackhawks. And Lance, welcome to Chicago.
Hey guys, good morning. How's it going?
Going fine. I just want you to know, Lance, I really disliked you in Calgary, and I couldn't be a bigger fan now.
Oh, that's good. I'm glad. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, really, I've come around. How does a guy? Now you listen. Yeah, as much as you've been around the game. How do you fit in with so much talent on this team, taking your game and what you know you're good at and making it work for this team? Because it can't just be coaches go, hey, Lance, do this, can it?
No, it's basically just, I mean, it is actually. I mean, it's just go out there and just play our game as a line. I think we just want to bring a different dimension to our team. And obviously what we do is we just go out there and try to be hard to play against and try to get the other team frustrated and wear them down. And if we do that, then we're doing a good job as a line.
Coach Q has referred to you guys as the energy line. What does that mean to you?
Yeah, that's exactly it. It's just providing energy for our team. Obviously, sometimes during a game, you're going to need a spark, so go out there and do whatever it takes to provide that. And exactly what I just said is just being hard to play against every time we get on the ice and making sure the defenseman or the other team knows when we're out there.
Dave, I would think that it also means Coach Q told you to be the energy line, so you better
yes,
be energetic.
You better be the energy line.
Otherwise, you'll have to answer to Coach
That's
Q.
That's what he was.
Exactly.
When you parted company with the Flames after spending your whole NHL career there, Lance, but then you turned right around and the Blackhawks offered you a contract, how much of a lift was that, given that it had to be a pretty disappointing situation for you with the way things ended with the Flames.
Yeah, it was for sure disappointing. Obviously, not the way I wanted it to go there. But at the same time, I was just, as soon as the Blackhawks called, I was excited. I mean, it's obviously a fresh start for me and such a great organization and a great team. So I was very excited and just obviously looking forward to getting the season going and made the summer that much easier knowing that I was coming here to Chicago. And I was really, really excited about it.
Are you a trash talker at all on the ice?
A little bit here and there.
The reason I ask is because you trash talk when you play the Hawks. Now you're a member of the Hawks. Did you have to square anything up with anybody?
No, it was pretty good. I think obviously guys know what's said on the ice kind of stays there. And obviously I didn't have to go and apologize to anyone. I think it was a pretty easy transition for me.
You picture Lance walks into the dressing room. Hey, Siebes. Remember that thing I said? Ooh, just a game. Come on, man.
Yeah, exactly.
Are you having fun? I mean, I think, listen, the most successful part of this Blackhawks run is the guys continually seem to be having fun. And I firmly believe, no matter how high the athletic competition is, fun means winning.
Well, for sure. I think it's obviously a very fun group to be around. Wasn't sure what to expect when I came here. I was a little nervous coming here, but obviously the guys have been great. A fun group, obviously, we just got to keep going. I think obviously if we have, like you said, if we're a tight group and we have fun together, then we're going to do some good things.
got your first goal with the Blackhawks the other night, the win over Arizona. And not just the goal, but you got what turned out to be the game-winning goal. That had to be a big lift for this team.
Yeah, it was exciting, obviously. Taking your first one that way, it was great. And obviously, it was a big win for us. So it was an important goal, and it was nice to get rewarded for that, for sure.
Yeah, it's got to be great to break the seal on that, because now you can just go to these guys. I don't know if you've heard of Taves and Kane, Dave, but you can just go, hey, give me the puck. Get me the puck.
Yeah, I don't know about that yet.
Well, a one-year deal with the Hawks means you got to earn your place in your keep, and it looks like you're off to a good start. Have you brought family into Chicago as well?
I have, yeah. My parents and my brother came for the home opener here. So they really enjoyed it. Obviously, Chicago is such a great city, and it's totally different than what I'm used to. So it's been fun here. Obviously, really, really enjoying getting to know the city. And I'm sure more family throughout the year is going to be coming as well.
Now, Dave, I think we can help Lance here.
Yeah,
because he'll get certain advice from the team. But did you have a favorite restaurant in Calgary that you liked over your time there?
I did. Yeah, there was a few spots I'd like to go.
What was like one of your favorites?
Pretty good. Salt Lick was pretty good downtown.
That's a steakhouse, isn't it?
Steakhouse, yeah.
All right, we have a lot of steakhouses. Let's just go through a couple. Have you been to Gibson's?
I've been to Gibson's, yes.
Okay.
Chicago Cut.
Chicago Cut, have you been there?
Yeah, of course, been to Chicago Cut.
All right. Smith and Walensky?
I have, yeah. I took my parents there.
Good God, man. Do you ever eat at home?
No, I mean, it's pretty easy to go out here and find a good restaurant, so it's kind of tough to cook at home, I think.
Like I said, Dave, Lance doesn't need our help at all.
No, I don't think so. I think he's finding the restaurants just fine.
Right.
The guys on your line, it's kind of interesting. I mean, Tommy Wingles is a local guy, but like yourself, comes to the Blackhawks after playing elsewhere throughout his NHL career. And then you have a young guy there by the name of John Hayden, who I think Blackhawks fans are really enjoying watching play. What strikes you early on about John's game and maybe what the upside is for him?
Yeah, I think obviously there's a tremendous upside there. I think obviously he's a guy who – he's a young guy who wants to learn. He asks a lot of questions and is very, accepts whatever you got to say to him. So he's going to be great. I think he's obviously showing already that he plays with some confidence and plays with a swagger, and I think that's a huge thing to have as a young player, for sure.
And we always, I'll let you go on this, but we always like to, have some inspiration for kids that listen and look up to you guys so much, because I'm sure you can imagine how big hockey has exploded in Chicago since the resurgence of the Hawks back in 08 and 09 and beyond. But what do you tell parents, because the kids are at school now, what do you tell parents of juniors on how to encourage them and keep them going in the game?
I think just the biggest thing is never get discouraged. Obviously, I think for everyone, there's going to be times throughout your career, for your hockey career, that things aren't going to go your way, or it's going to be a disappointing time. So just continue to be yourself and work hard. And if you do that, then everything will work out.
Shahay Bagdasarian is our listener question of the day. Wanted to know when you started playing hockey. How old were you?
I started playing when I was about 4 years old. My brother's team didn't have enough players, so they asked me if I would be willing to play, and obviously jumped all over it, and it's been great ever since.
I understand you weren't the best forechecker at four.
I couldn't stop, so what I would do, I just go and run into the boards and hopefully maybe hit someone at the same time. But
the human collision.
Exactly, yeah.
Good catching up with you, man. We're thrilled that you're here. Congrats on getting the first one. Keep it coming, and stay healthy.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys. Really appreciate it.
Appreciate you, Lance. You being on. Lance, not Booma, Dave.
No, it's not Booma.
It's Lance.
Booma.
But though Booma is a better cheer.
Booma, 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 Booma.
It would be.
Yeah.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
It's your thing. Do what you want to do.
9:13 now.
I can't tell you who to
talk to. On the Steve Cochran Show, all-time top 10.
Do what you want to do.
This is number 9. Girls for Science. Girls are number four. Science. That's a cool organization. And we're talking a little bit off the air about this. Like, what we know we can do better is everything. And STEM education is crucial. And Jackie Lomax is here. You founded this organization, Jackie, because we see studies, too many of them. One would be too many. But we see studies that say, oh, you know, girls are not good at science and math. Nonsense!
That's so true.
And you did this for your daughter.
I did. I did it for my daughter. I did it for myself. I did it for the community. I wanted to try and be a solution to reverse the curse, to improve the confidence and empowerment of females, exposure and opportunity.
So let's back this up. Do you believe that it's more than a cliche and it's a bias that exists in the education system that girls aren't good at science, technology, math, and engineering?
I do. I really think it's a bias. I think that if opportunities are available, girls are just as interested.
Sure. Yeah, it just depends on what fires them up.
Absolutely.
Seems like Hidden Figures last year deterred a lot of those.
What a great movie.
I mean, the background of NASA is such powerful women. Do you find that that movie inspired a lot of young girls too?
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, we showcased the movie to our students. And to add to that, one of our sponsors, Ingredion Incorporated, they sponsor our girls to go to space camp in Huntsville, Alabama.
Oh, cool.
Where they can have extended learning for 1 week. They can talk to retired astronauts. They can participate in flight simulation and study aerospace.
How many girls have gone through your program?
We've had over 500 students.
Wow.
Since inception, be a part of our program.
So the oldest of those girls would be how old now?
About 22 years old.
Do they stay in touch with you and go?
Absolutely. We have an alumni association where we're trying to partner them with internship opportunities. We try to offer workforce placement. So they're very relative in our pipeline of success.
And would they possibly, or maybe they already do, mentor the younger girls?
Absolutely. That's a cornerstone of our support, almost like little sisters, big sisters, encouragement.
How do you do this without interrupting the regular school day?
Well, we're a Saturday science program at Olive Harvey Community College, Malcolm X Community College, and my alma mater, the University of St. Francis in Joliet.
All right, so you got downtown and the burbs.
Absolutely.
Okay. And how do parents get their girls involved?
Usually it's through word of mouth or also on our website at www.girls4science.org.
And how little are we talking here? As young as what age?
As young as 10.
Perfect. 10-year-olds,
yeah,
really?
That's great.
Mm-hmm. So you're probably seeing a bunch of little geniuses too, right?
Absolutely.
How do you know how to group them? Because it's not a traditional classroom setting necessarily, right?
That's true. It's a non-competitive environment. So a 10-year-old oftentimes will sit beside maybe her big sister or cousin that may be in junior high. We have an experimental learning where, you know, we embrace everyone's contribution.
Yeah,
we talked about how you started this as part of a way to honor your daughter as well and everybody else, but what's your daughter doing now?
Currently, my daughter is a sophomore at Central Michigan University. She's a biology major.
There you go. Science kids.
I remember having a chemistry set as a kid, you mm-hmm. know, and are you finding, you know, chemistry, biology, physics, is it all types of sciences that the young kids are involved or are interested in now?
Yes, it's a diverse subject matter in STEM. And this being National Chemistry Month, I wanted to acknowledge Linda McGill Bozeman, who's a founding board member, and she's also the only African-American of female descent to own and operate her own chemical manufacturing company.
What cool is that?
And
God bless.
I can add, one of my most memorable science projects with Girls for Science was the students making their own hand soap using chemicals, talking about entrepreneurship. So it was very life-changing.
That's cool.
Was that particular day odorific in class?
it actually had really good fragrances.
Is that right? Because that could be an interesting mixture depending on what gets mixed with what.
Absolutely.
You know, I did not know it was Chemistry Month, and I feel like I should now reach out and apologize to the great beyond where my chemistry teacher, Roland Ball, Mr. Ball, I nearly put him in the hospital with my performance in chemistry. He was not impressed. So we got to stop assuming. We have to stop assuming that girls are good at this or boys are good at that. And we got to assume that every kid's going to aspire, as long as we encourage them to what excites them.
Absolutely. So, that's our first step.
So what do you say to parents who struggle with kids, maybe who are struggling in school?
I say each one teach one. I say form alliances. I'm not good at everything, which is why Girls for Science exists. It exists because of my own weakness, because of my own fear. But I was able to stand on the shoulders of others, people in the community, teachers, and also scientists to help me launch the organization.
How do you do this for free?
Well, if it was a cost, I don't think I would have been able to be a member. So,
But that's nice of you, but there are costs involved.
There are. We have an advisory board who helps us with fundraising, which is one opportunity to help us keep the doors open. The families, they also host crowdfunding opportunities. We have a small board of directors. So, and we're still in more need. The need, it never stops.
Do the we're undergoing a situation in the city where Google's moved in and Facebook has moved in, and we've got this fabulous technology hub on one part of town, and we got the nerdery on the Eisenhower. There's a lot of tech money in town. Do they know what you're doing?
Absolutely, and we're trying to have more introductions, and being here today will help hopefully offset more of a presence. As a matter of fact, this fall we're teaching the girls technology, so we're partnering with Expedia. The girls are learning Great. About technology related in the travel industry, building game apps, learning about how robotics are used in the medical profession. So as a matter of fact, we've also hosted Google at certain fundraising events.
Let's write a check, boys. Let's write a check, Google.
Thank you.
Let's write a check, Facebook. Let's step up.
Thank you.
You know, I mean, these companies are large enough where they could underwrite your future here, and I'd like to see somebody step up and do that.
Thank you.
Because the stress of raising money has got to take its toll.
It does, but I don't do it by myself. I'm one of us affiliated with so many.
I have a feeling that once people meet you and get a sense of what the program is, they get it, right? But until they get it, they don't get it.
That's true.
So it's going to the website, asking your questions, probably reaching out. Can people contact you through the website?
Absolutely. You can contact me, www.girls4science.org. We'd love to talk with you offline. Perhaps you'd like to host a field trip, have a student shadow a day in the industry. Perhaps you would like to facilitate a class lecture. Absolutely.
That would be cool.
Girlsforscience.org. God bless you. Thanks for the work you're doing.
Thanks for having me.
Now take a couple days off and go see your kid.
Thank you.
All right.
Okay.
I'm thinking about you. 9:22. Right. More in a moment on 720 WGN.
I won't give up on us, even if the skies get rough. I'm giving you all my love. Still looking up.
Love this song. Love this song.
And when you're needing your space to do some navigating.
Pull up to a stoplight in Chicago and I'm singing this at the top of my lungs. Gently crying. It's our friend Willie Geist live from New York. Good morning, pal.
Yeah, good morning. That's a visual I'd like to have seen. You weeping at a stoplight.
I just love that record, man.
It is good. You get lost in it. You know, you don't want to talk. Just listen to this for 3 minutes and go.
That's the problem, I talk. This Sunday today, Willie Geist featuring?
Our guest this week is Mandy Moore. She's one of the stars of This Is Us, the big NBC hit show that has people weeping openly in their homes every Tuesday night. Huge numbers, 12 million people watching the show every week. And she plays the mother. You know, she plays everything from 22 years old to 66 years old. They have all these flashbacks in the show. So I honestly hadn't watched it until I knew I was going to interview her, got into it. My wife watched it. I would come into the bedroom once in a while, and she'd be in tears. And I'd say, my God, what's happened? Is it the family? She said, "No, I'm watching This Is Us." So it's one of these cultural phenomenon shows, and Mandy Moore is right at the middle of it, and she's a blast. She's smart. She's fun. She's cool. She's grateful for this big sort of second act in her career. She was a teen pop star in the late 90s, and really fun conversation. I think people like her. Even if you don't watch the show, which a lot of people do, you'll like hanging out with her.
I have not met her. Is she super tall?
5'10".
Yeah.
5'10". Yeah. No, I'd met her once or twice before, but I forgot, and she was in heels, and she was, I go 6'4". I'm a tall drink of water. So she was, but she was as close as, well, I guess Carly Kloss I interviewed. She's 6'2". She's in a different league. But, yeah, she's tall. She's 5'10", and she's, you know, she's only 33, but when you get in the show business at 15, you've sort of lived a lot of life, you know, and seen a lot and been through it. So she's got a good perspective on all this.
The writers have an interesting challenge on this show because one of the most likable characters in recent memory on TV is the guy that plays the dad. Flawed, that's he is. We know he dies. That's not spoiling it for anybody. But the flashback narrative of the show allows him to continue to be in the show, and now maybe he's got a brother, and it's got to be an interesting writer's room.
Yeah, it is. And he's, you know, they had, I guess, the tease ahead where they showed the house, I guess, that looked like it had been burned. Some people think he died in a fire, but no one will say. They, you know, you can almost see the showrunners with their blow darts were just off camera. Pointed at the stars when you ask them the question of how Jack died. It's a closely guarded secret. But, yeah, I mean, when you're writing from 1970-something through 2017, these characters, and you go back and forth and back and forth, it's a challenge. And she goes through the 2 hours of prosthetics to become the 66-year-old woman and all that stuff. And it works. I remember hearing, like, Mandy Moore is playing a 66-year-old mother. And you go, oh, God, that's going to be terrible. How did they pull that off? They make it work. It's a good show.
And a huge hit for NBC at a time where network TV and primetime certainly needs the hits. How's it feel, though? You know, our friend Willie Geist, morning, if you had said 10 years ago, maybe even 5 years ago, that morning TV would be the bank for television networks, they'd think you were crazy, but that's where it's all shifted.
Yeah, it is. I mean, today's show has always been obviously a huge moneymaker for NBC, but it definitely is. And I'll tell you what, cable news, too. I mean, as we know, viewing trends are going down all over the place, and these are sort of structural changes that people are fighting and losing in many cases. But Morning Joe, the other show I do on MSNBC, the numbers have never been better. I mean, people are so engaged and interested in politics. That's the one thing. But I also think that niche programming is sort of where it's at. The shows that are all things to all people, it's hard to justify watching it. I want to know about the thing I'm interested in. So if you love sports, you watch ESPN. And if you love politics, you watch Morning Joe or you watch Fox and Friends or whatever your point of view is. And I think that's kind of where the action is.
Has Joe and Mika set a date yet? And will you be the ring bearer in the wedding?
I don't know. I haven't, you know, I've been sort of waiting for my invitation. I'm either.
You're hoping you're invited. Well, okay.
They either don't have a date or I just haven't been invited to the wedding. I don't know which is true. I don't know. People ask me, are they going to do a big wedding with everybody in their orbit or do they just do like a quick family deal? And I don't know the answer. I think they keep talking about next spring or summer, but they won't say where. I think there's some debate, as Joe said on an interview the other day, about whether Mika becomes Mika Scarborough, which I think she's resisting.
Mm-hmm.
So they got to hammer out a few things before they have a wedding.
Well, please feel free to volunteer the fact that I'm internet ordained if they need me to do the service.
I went to a wedding last fall, and my buddy was an internet ordained, and he actually did the service.
Yeah.
He married the people, and then when he showed us his license, there was a little date in the bottom right corner on the card that said it had expired 7 years prior. So luckily it was after the wedding, so we didn't tell anybody about it.
I think I've done eight now, eight or nine.
Have you really?
Yeah.
Oh, so you really do? Oh, that's cool.
Well, it was done as a joke for a buddy of mine, and he's the only one that got divorced. The other eight stuck.
That's a good batting average, 7 out of 8.
Yeah. The good news is it's a nice thing to do. The bad news is a lot of people ask. Milo Ventimiglia, I want to give him credit. That's the name of the actor I couldn't think of who plays the dad, Jack, on the show. And
he's
obviously
good.
Mandy Moore's great. You know who else is great on that show is the guy that plays Toby, the boyfriend, Chris Sullivan.
Yes.
Big dude,
he's
funny
great.
Dude.
He was on the Today Show yesterday. He's good. And Sterling, obviously, is incredible. He won
Mr. Awards.
He won the Emmy, yeah. So it's a good show. I think people will be psyched to see Mandy on Sunday.
All right, so Tuesday I'll be at Willie's house. We're going to pretend we're downstairs watching sports, and we're just going to sit there and weep openly.
Like we do, eating bonbons with Kleenex and weeping openly. There we go.
Sunday Today with Willie Geist. Thanks, buddy.
Thanks, Steve. See ya.
See you later. And big story next. And then a special guest appearance by Mark Carman. He's not easy to get.
Oh, yes.
It's coming up on 720 WGN.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
That's our friend Mark Carman here. When Mark's not on WGN doing the beat, filling in for Dave, parking cars, he works at Fansided. Fansided is F-A-N-S-I-D-E-D, a fan content-generated website for sports nuts like you. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, Steve. Thanks for having me. We got a great contest out there that I think a WGN listener should win.
Before you want to talk about that, though, don't you want to tell me what your thoughts are on Joe Girardi?
I've always liked Joe Girardi. Great Wildcat. Great Cub.
What's not to like? He's a great guy.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm sure that Joe Girardi, if he wants to manage again, will manage again.
It's a very odd move for the Yankees to make.
Well,
I mean, it's strange for the Cubs to let Joe Maddon go at this point as well.
That is bizarre.
There is a shelf life, though, for managers. I mean, in every sport, coaches, I mean, at some point, and maybe it was time, you know? Maybe he felt it was time. Maybe they felt it was time.
Are you thinking Joe probably said, let's cut the ties?
No, well, I'm not saying that, but I'm saying, but maybe he didn't protest too much. I mean, it might be the kind of thing where, like.
Is there any chance that Sam Zell bought the Yankees and we didn't get the word? Because Sam screws up everything.
He's a family guy, too, so I'm not exactly sure how old his kids are now, but I know one of the reasons why he wanted to stay in New York back in the day when people were
floating. Let him finish school?
Yeah, so I'm not sure where that all sits, which makes it a little bit more interesting because I would think that.
Girardi's kids still in school? They got to be in college by now, aren't they?
No, I don't think. I think he's got. His younger kid might be in high school, I think. He might have one who's close to college.
All right, so Fansided, a contest at Fansided you want to let people know about?
So you have the sports person of the year, Steve. We're doing the fan of the year. We're looking for a great fan who exhibits fanmanship. Everybody's got their own definition of that. Mm-hmm. But someone who is a diehard, who goes to games, who watches at home.
Lives it, breathes it.
Lives it, breathes it, positive. You know, we're not looking for the lunatic who's screaming at, you know, whoever you want to put, Chris Bryant when he has a bad day. Guy stays in there, right? Still loves his Cubs, even though they didn't quite make it to the.
Would this include like a shrine at the house, that type of thing?
Well, if you think you're a great fan and you think you could qualify, all you got to do is go to Fansided.
So there's no real parameters here. It's just show your fandom.
Right. 200-word essay, 2-minute video. So you can just pick up your phone.
Ooh, you're asking diehard sports fans to write an essay.
Well, they could just pick up the phone, get a little video, 2 minutes. This is why I think I should win. Email it in. Done.
And since this is not a WGN contest, then Andrea is eligible to enter.
Can I enter?
I was going to say.
Any of us could enter.
Right. And it doesn't have to necessarily be a fan of a sports team. Like, it could be just a Steve Cochran fan, like somebody who's got pictures of you.
We should do that contest.
You. Yeah, we should. We could win.
Right. Just how much of a diehard are you? I'm a Steve Cochran fan. I listen every day. I've got XYZ. I know every job that Steve Cochran ever had.
You guys will cut it down to. I don't even know every job I've had.
You'd shave your head. I mean, it would just be this whole thing.
Right. I watch on CLTV, the whole thing.
Yeah. And hi to everybody on CLTV, which I haven't said yet. So cut it down to finalists, and then you'll go from there. What does the winner get?
The winner gets a 3-night stay in New York City, which is a beautiful.
Where they'll be interviewed for the Yankees managerial job.
Where they'll have a shot to manage the Yankees, and they get to go to the Sports Person of the Year. So last year it was LeBron, and you get to go to this whole gala event, the big table, sit there, big wigs
it's a
everywhere.
Good contest.
It's an awesome, awesome contest, awesome prize.
How do you enter?
Fansided.com. It's all across
right
the
there. Just
it's,
click the
it's
banner.
All right there for you.
Does the winner get to meet you? Because that would be a huge inspiration.
We haven't put that in there. I think perhaps.
What about this cult in Wisconsin? Could they go up in the woods in Wisconsin with you and stay in a cabin?
They could come to the Right Foundation if they'd like to, Steve. Sure, why not? We can have some growth along
Does
with this.
The Right Foundation appreciate all the plugs you give them here?
They do. They absolutely do. Mm-hmm. And they're a big fan of the show. Actually,
they're probably not wild about me using the word cult in the same sentence. I guess.
Oh no, but they're willing. Hey, if you want to have that discussion. They'd love to engage you, Steve. So will I.
No, listen, any personal growth thing is fine, and Lord knows you need it, man.
Well, we all do, don't we?
Yeah.
Okay. Steve's got it. My bad.
All right. Fansided.com.
Fansided.com. Fan of the year. Love to see a WGN listener get it.
Nicki Minaj paying the tuition for someone.
How about that?
How about that story? Coming up next, Mark Carman available anytime. And also looking for a friend on the weekends. You're on the beat Saturday?
I am not this Saturday. I'm actually off. We got Ohio State and the Cats.
No, I'm sorry. Not
Michigan
Ohio
State.
State.
Michigan
Please.
State. My bad.
Want to see Dave have instant?
We got Sparty.
I've been preparing all week for Michigan State.
I got Ohio State on my
Michigan
mind.
State will be enough work. Yeah.
Yes.
This just
indeed.
In. No problem. Northwestern playing Michigan State.
Yes. Yes. Very important. 9:52 and more coming up. 7:20 WGN. It's 9:55. We'll say hi to the future here. Andrea, who's in studio?
University of Illinois College of Media students. We have a couple of sophomores, juniors, and seniors under the guidance of John Paul and Ken Erdy from the U of I.
What is your name?
My name is Bianca Reyes.
And where are you from?
I am from Palatine, Illinois.
And why'd you decide on U of I?
It's a Big Ten school. It's close to home. And
so you still like your family? That's good.
I do. Yep. I come home right. Every so often, a little right. More often than they probably like. But
I doubt that.
Oh, no.
And you're in what program?
I am in broadcast journalism.
Okay, we talked off the air, but pretend we didn't. So what do you want to do?
I want to do more TV broadcasting.
Yeah.
So I originally thought I wanted to anchor, but you know, now that I'm thinking about it, I'm maybe more production side.
I noticed that we got a shortage of dudes in this class. We got two guys? Is that right? What do you guys want to do? Shout it out.
I'd also like to go into broadcast news.
On air?
Yeah, maybe be an anchor.
No. Good. I like that. And?
Same for me, too, actually. Broadcast journalism. So.
I don't know how you're going to get these guys back. Everybody wants the same jobs.
I know. Hey, it's okay. We all help each other out. Yeah, we all help each other out.
Do you guys blog?
I do not.
You need to blog.
I know.
Okay. The video blog in particular for what you want to do.
Right.
And everybody goes, oh, what do I talk about? What do I talk about? It doesn't matter what you talk about. It's
just
reps.
Life.
It's reps. It's reps. You know, you continue to plan. You continue to get an idea of what it takes to put stuff together. Am I right?
Absolutely. 100%. You got to get the practice for doing it.
Andrea's on TV every weekend. Dave's on TV all the time as well. And you're on TV right now, by the way. Say hi to CLTV.
CLTV.
Oh, hey.
Up here.
Yeah. Hi, Mom.
So, well, good luck to all of you guys. Who's the best student in this bunch? Just don't be shy. Don't be shy. Who's pulling a 4.0 or close?
Oh,
right? Looks like they.
Oh,
I just wanted to see.
They so, all are.
Is it you? Are you close?
I was on the dean's list last semester.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. For those of you between a 3 and a 3.5, perfect for show business. Yeah, exactly. A little bit of ADD, can't focus, perfect for show business. But congratulations.
Thank
You're obviously
you.
In a great school. Speaking of great schools, Mary, aren't you from the University of Illinois?
I am.
And you
same
have,
as Andrea. We were both in journalism, broadcast journalism.
You got to take these folks by to meet Mary then.
Oh, yeah, and they're going to get a talking to from Todd Manley.
They're going to get a talking to.
They're
going to
get a lecture, and then Dave Bennett, I think, is going to be making a guest appearance too.
Well, it's nice to meet you guys. Nothing
you
but
do?
Success.
Yeah,
by the way, I have a 4-year contract. I just want to make that clear for those of you coming to take the jump. Nice to meet you, and thanks for being the victim that
Thank
we were
you.
More than willing to bring on the air without your permission. Appreciate that. I want to congratulate Pedro Velasquez, 27-year-old former guest on the show from City Colleges of Chicago, Wright College, pursuing his educational goals, a huge Nicki Minaj fan, and Nicki Minaj is paying his tuition.
How about that?
Isn't that cool?
That's a very cool story.
Yeah, it's a really cool
Good
story.
Good for Pedro.
And the City Colleges of Chicago continue to do great stuff. Bill and Wendy next.